Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mantre nanena devasya kuryat dravyamayam buddhaha saparyam divider dravye desakala vibhagavit. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is the 12-syllable mantra for worshipping Lord Krishna. One should install the physical forms of the Lord, and with the chanting of the mantra one should offer flour and fruits and offer varieties of foodstuffs exactly according to rules and regulations prescribed by authorities. But this should be done in consideration of place and time and attendant conveniences and inconvenience. Purport. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya is known as the Dvadas Akshar Mantra. This mantra is chanted by Vaishnava devotees and it begins with pranava omkara. There is an injunction that those who are not brahmanas cannot pronounce the pranava mantra. But Dhruva Maharaj was born a kshatriya. He at once admitted before Narada Muni that as a kshatriya, he was unable to accept Narada's instruction of renunciation and mental equilibrium, which are the concern of a brahmana. Still, although not a brahmana but a kshatriya, Dhruva was allowed on the authority of Narada to pronounce the pranava omkara. This is very significant. Especially in India, the caste brahmanas object greatly when persons from other castes who are not born in brahmana families recite this pranava mantra. But here is tacit proof that if a person accepts the Vaishnava mantra or Vaishnava way of worshipping the deity, he is allowed to chant the pranava mantra. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord personally accepts that anyone, even one of a low species, can be elevated to the highest position and go back home, back to Godhead, simply if he worships properly. The prescribed rules, as stated here by Narada, are that one should accept the mantra through a bona fide spiritual master and hear the mantra in the right ear. Not only should one chant or murmur the mantra, but in front of him he must have the deity or physical form of the Lord. Of course, when the Lord appears, it is no longer a physical form. For example, when an iron rod is made red hot in a fire, it is no longer iron, it is a fire. Similarly, when we make a form of the Lord, whether of wood or stone or metal or jewels or paint, or even a form within the mind, it is a bona fide spiritual transcendental form of the Lord. Not only must one receive the mantra from the bona fide spiritual master, like Narada Muni, or his representative in disciplic succession, but one must chant the mantra. And not only must one chant, but he should also offer whatever foodstuff is available in his part of the world according to time and convenience. The method of worship, chanting the mantra, and preparing the forms of the Lord is not stereotyped, nor is it exactly the same everywhere. It is specifically mentioned in this verse that one should take consideration of the time, place, and available conveniences. Our Krishna Consciousness movement is going on throughout the entire world, and we also install deities in different centers. Sometimes our Indian friends, puffed up with concocted notions, criticize, "This has not been done, that has not been done." But they forget this instruction of Narada Muni to one of the greatest Vaishnavas, Dhruva Maharaj. One has to consider the particular time, country, and convenience. What is convenient in India may not be convenient in the Western countries. Those who are not actually in the line of Acharyas, or who personally have no knowledge of how to act in the role of Acharya, unnecessarily criticize the activities of the ISKCON movement in countries outside of India. The fact is that such critics cannot do anything personally to spread Krishna consciousness. If someone does go and preach, taking all risks and allowing all considerations for time and place, it might be that there are changes in the manner of worship, but that is not at all faulty according to Shastra. Srimad Veera Raghav Acharya, an Acharya in the disciplic succession of the Ramanuja Sampradaya, has remarked in his commentary that chandalas, or conditioned souls, who are born in lower than Sudra families, can also be initiated according to circumstances. The formalities may be slightly changed here and there to make them Vaishnavas. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that his name should be heard in every nook and corner of the world. How is this possible unless one preaches everywhere? The cult of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Bhagavad Dharma. He especially recommends Krishna Katha, or the cult of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. He recommends that every Indian consider this task to be para upakara, or welfare activity. Take the Lord's message to other residents of the world. Other residents of the world does not refer only to those who are exactly like the Indian Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, or like the caste Brahmanas, who claim to be Brahmanas because they were born in the families of Brahmanas. The principle that only Hindus and Hindus, that only Indians and Hindus should be brought into the Vaishnav cult is a mistaken idea. There should be a propaganda to bring everyone to the Vaishnav cult. The Krishna conscious movement is meant for this purpose. There is no bar to propagating the Krishna conscious movement even among people who are born in Chandala, Malacha or Yavana families. Even in India, this point has been initiated by Srila Sanatana Goswami in his book Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is Smriti and is the authorized Vedic guide for Vaishnavas in their daily behavior. Sanatana Goswami says that as bell metal can turn to gold when mixed with mercury in a chemical process, so by the bona fide Diksha or initiation method, anyone can become a Vaishnava. Once you take initiation from a bona fide spiritual master, coming in the disciplic succession, who is authorized by his predecessor spiritual master. This is called Diksha Vidana. Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Vyapasritya, one should accept a spiritual master. By this process, the entire world can be converted to Krishna consciousness. So this is our purpose today, to undergo a transformation, to enter into a new state of consciousness. Consciousness is the key through which we are perceiving the reality around us. It is said that we are simply seeing the entire universe through the state of our mind, Atmavam Daryate Jagat. So it is the state of consciousness that has to alter, and with it also appropriate activity. One must... activities are the result of our consciousness. So in Krishna consciousness, we reverse the ways of our previous life. We give up all sinful activity. And gradually, we diminish our involvement with trying to enjoy the material energy. Sinful activity and enjoying the material energy are not the same, because there's bona fide enjoyment of the material energy. But such enjoyment, even if it is bona fide, is very limited, because it's all fleeting happiness. Comes and goes very quickly. So we're looking at something more meaningful. Svayam acharanam sada. At something that gives us lasting benefit. Svayas. Not prayas, not immediate benefit. But deep long-term benefit. And that is our initiation. Our initiation means we focus on the long-term benefit. And even in the short term, we are ready to make some sacrifice if that is required. Still, it is not needed that we are making initiation a process of austerity. Austerity, rather, is a secondary aspect of the process of devotional service. Everything is followed by austerity. If you want to, my mother used to sit in front of a mirror and do all kinds of things. And she used to say, "If you want to be beautiful, you have to be ready to suffer some pain." Yeah? And pull out hairs and, you know, do all kinds of things. That's what ladies do. If one wants to make a career, one has to study extensively. As my father used to remind me that as a student he had a bucket of water next to him and would wrap wet towels around his head to somehow or other stay awake and focus and so on. And so he became a textiles engineer, you know, which is quite a technical, high-tech thing. But so much endeavor in the world to make progress, and austerity is part of it. But that's not the goal, right? That's not the goal. So Krishna consciousness also, whatever austerities are connected to this initiation, that's not the goal and that's not the meditation. So when we are speaking about four regulative principles, they are basically four prohibitions. So prohibition, restriction, austerity seem to come in that line. But the Bhagavad Gita is speaking about the regulative principles of freedom, which is a different interpretation, a different understanding. In the Bhagavad Gita, the regulative principles are not looked upon as restricting, but rather liberating. And that is interesting, because generally we experience these things as restrictions. We get involved in the Hare Krishna movement, and you can't eat this, you can't eat that, you know, you got so many complications, right? You know, men and women interaction, so many rules governing the whole thing, and all just restriction, restriction, restriction. So we also tend to perceive these regulative principles as restrictive. Even when we take initiation, we sort of think, well, you know, this is the price you have to pay, and then, you know, you can go back to Godhead if all goes well. But the truth is that these regulative principles are restricting nothing but our maya, our illusion. They're only restricting our illusion. And actually, all these things that we are giving up were the cause of our pain. They were a thorn in our side. They were actually all along the sources of our suffering. Eating unedible things is the source of so much suffering. Gambling is insanity. As we all know, it just destroys one's life. The illicit sex, intoxication, all these things, they bind us in suffering. So actually, as we give it up, it's very nice. We become free. So we're not really giving up anything. I learned this from my spiritual master, who summed it up very, very simple when he was in New York, crossing the street, and a policeman saw him in his robes and said, "What is it? What is it that you guys have to give up?" The answer was suffering. That's all. And that's all we have to give up. So that we should very much remember on this day. All we are giving up is suffering. And nothing else. It's not that, oh, I'm making a great sacrifice. No, I'm getting liberated from all this suffering. I'm so fortunate, actually. It is so wonderful to live by these principles. Even if my stubborn and obstinate mind is sometimes rebelling, and thinking, oh, these principles. But then we know, I am still meant, right? Nunam pramate, pramate kurate yat indriya priti apninoti. That the living being in the material world is pramate, says the Bhagavatam. The conditioned soul who is trying to enjoy the senses is pramate. So pramate, mate means meant, and pramate means basically completely mad or raving mad. Right? So in that way, the conditioned souls are not actually in control of themselves. And we also, for a long time, have not been in control of ourselves for many, many lifetimes. And although we may have kept up a nice facade for the world, right? And we have shown to be, you know, people with character, people with many qualifications, and so on. The truth of the matter is, we have not been in control of ourselves for a long time. We have been controlled by passions stronger than ourselves. Passions that pushed us like a boat that is pushed by the wind. We have been pushed by so many things. We have not been able to control our tongue. We have not been able to control our eyes. We have not been able to control our senses. We have actually been driven by these senses to do things that were foolish, to do things that were undesirable. We've covered it up. We've covered our tracks, and we've become good at it. At first, okay, as a child, a bit clumsy about these things, but with time you become very sophisticated in hiding the tracks of our uncontrolled senses. It is very rare to be able to control the senses. In the Upadesamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami is addressing this topic, and he is saying, Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam, etan vegam, yuvisaheta dhira, sarvam apiman prithivim sasishyat. He is saying that a person, he's speaking about the vegas, it's the pushings of the senses. It's just the senses are always pushing. He said, one who can control the pushes, the pushings of speech, who can control the pushings of the mind, who can control the pushings of anger, who can control the pushing of tongue, belly, and genitals, such a person is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So that means it's very rare. Yeah, that's very rare. Then one is a liberated soul. Of course, Srila Prabhupada said that all his disciples should come to this platform where they can, of being qualified to act as spiritual masters. Right? And so that is our family heritage. The same desire that Srila Prabhupada expressed in relation to his disciples, we will also express, right? Because this carries on. Because this morning I mentioned, as we were giving the lecture, and an endless stream of people came in for darshan, and I knew they're going to take darshan, and they're going to come back also. And sure enough, anyway, I was thinking, Gotram Vardhanam Iti, let our family line increase, right? We are a family. We are a family. In India, it is still quite common to ask someone, what is your gotra? Right? What is your gotra? What is your family lineage? I remember that when I came to India, I came to Gaya. This is before I joined Krishna Consciousness. And I came to Gaya, and I stayed the night in a dharamshala, so I had to fill out the register, and they asked for the gotra. They asked for the gotra. So when I said, like, well, in the tradition of my country, this is not like a common practice, you know, so I have to leave this blank. He said, no, just put jat, right? So jat means one who has no caste, right? Who is like tribal, basically, you know, tribal personality. So they sort of put me in the tribal category. Barbarian is a Latin word for the same, you know. So I guess I was a barbarian. I got a corner in the Dharamsala where barbarians can stay. But now, if someone would ask me, what is my gotra? Now I can answer. Now I can answer. Because now I will say, there are different gotras, different lines, coming from various great sages. You see, the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, they all originate from the great sages. You can trace all these lines back to the great sages. So you can say you are in the Bharadvaj Gotra, or you are a Parasara, or you are Gautam, you know, Gotra, like this, different Gotras, right? And all this. Yes, very good. Nice. But we will say, no, we're not in the Gautam Gotra. No, not Parasar Gotra. No, not Bharadvaj Muni. No, none of these. We are in the Achyuta Gotra. The Achyuta Gotra. Achyuta means infallible. It's the infallible Gotra. Achyuta Gotra. So it means that there may be a flaw in the other Gotras. By saying the Achyuta Gotra, we're pointing out there may be a flaw in these other gotras. But in this gotra, it is infallible. There is no flaw, no fault, because this gotra is the gotra coming from Krishna. The Achyuta Gotra. He is Krishna. Another meaning of Achyuta Gotra, it is the gotra coming from Krishna. So we're coming in the perfect line of Krishna. And it is very interesting how in India, even up to the day of today, this gotra, the by diksha, is still recognized. Whereas the temple president in Vrindavan, I used to buy land, right, for our property. So then, you know, in India, there is, when you want to know the gotra, they ask, okay, your name, your name, first name, last name, so on, and then they ask father's name. Yeah? It's a tradition. They're always asking for father's name. In the West, they have father's name. What you need to know my father's name for? You know, my name is enough, right? You know, no, father's name. You must fill out father's name. Father's name. My father's dead. Doesn't matter. Put father's name. Yeah? In my case, he's dead. Because you have to do this gotra. But if instead of father's name, you put guru's name, that counts, that's legal, you can do that. In the West, you know, you would they'd put you in jail if instead of, they ask for father's name, you put guru's name, you know, they'd lock you up for that. Yeah. It's like the whole document is invalid, false document. But in India, you can write, instead of father's name, you can write guru's name, and it counts. And when you ask for the family lineage, you give your gotra, you know, by diksha, and it counts. That's your family. So it is like that. So from this day on, those who take the first initiation, they will be in a new family lineage, the one from Krishna. And it counts. It's legal in India. It's bona fide. It's recognized. It is the infallible gotra. It is the best of all gotras. There is no doubt. Because it is the transcendental gotra. It is the transcendental family. So this family aspect is very important. That we Vaishnavas or a family. Vaishnavas are so rare. Where do you find a Vaishnava in London?
Bhaktivedanta Manor or Sower Street, you know, or like so many devotees living all around. Plenty of them.
Yeah, in a sense, but what kind of percentage? What kind of percentage of the world population are now Vaishnavas? Right? I mean, it's like, I don't think it's going to be 0.1. I don't think it's going to be 0.1. Or 0.01. Or 0.001. It's going to be a very small percentage, right, of the world population. So, with that, we can see Vaishnavas are very rare. Vaishnavas are very precious. To have a relationship with a Vaishnava is never an ordinary thing. No Vaishnava, you know, no matter how eccentric, no matter how, you know, no matter what their particular character may be, no Vaishnava is an ordinary person. Every Vaishnava, therefore, is precious and must be, we must be very careful in dealing with Vaishnavas. The relationship with the Vaishnavas is is to be handled with care. Right? On relationships with Vaishnava, it comes in a box with all these glass stickers on it, you know. Right? It says, handle with care, you know. Do not put upside down. Do not shake. Right? So do not shake Vaishnavas. Do not put Vaishnavas upside down. Do not throw Vaishnavas on the floor. Right? Do not just carelessly put a Vaishnava somewhere and knock them over as you're walking past. Beware, beware. Treat Vaishnavas with care. Fragile item. Yes. Vaishnavas are, because if you have a mundane relationship, oh well, there are so many mundane people. If it doesn't work with one, you get somebody else. Right? No problem. But a Vaishnava is a person who can give us the greatest blessings. A Vaishnava is carrying blessings. A Vaishnava is, just by being with us, blessing the entire environment and reminding us of Krishna and bringing us to Krishna. This morning we were talking about this verse which speaks about the cows that are longing to go to Gokul, but that live in the desert of the voice. And then, you know, these cows, they desire that the Vaishnavas may take them to the oasis of the ears, where one can hear Krishna Katha. So this is what happens. It's the Vaishnavas that take us to the oasis. The Vaishnavas bring us there. So this verse of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami shows his brilliancy. Right? He has these brilliant, very pointed, condensed verses which in a metaphorical, poetic way are just making the point of how much we need the Vaishnavas. Therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about the same topic. He speaks about the Kalyana Kalpataru, the auspicious desire tree. He said, my spiritual master gave me this auspicious desire tree that can fulfill all wishes, all desires. He said, but he gave it in my care, but due to my harsh mind, I have not properly cared for this tree and it has now become a little bit depleted. But in the association of the Vaishnavas, this tree can be restored in its full glory and then produce all desirable fruits. That's not good. There's a demon coming out of your mouth when you're yawning. And it attacks others. So in this way, the Vaishnavas are not only meant to be treated with respect. That's obviously one injunction. Once you treat all Vaishnavas with respect, no, Vaishnavas should be treated with joy. It should be a great joy to see a Vaishnava, to be with the Vaishnavas. That's what it means. Respect means, you know, it's something like being polite, you know, which is, in a way, polite is a bit hypocritical, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, so nice to see you. Oh my gosh. How do I get rid of them? You know? Oh, no. They always come around dinner time. We're eating out tonight. Somehow or other, you know. So, yes, come in for a moment, but unfortunately, you know, we were just about to go. So unfortunately, you know, we'd have to make an appointment for some other time. All very polite, but meanwhile, you know, get rid of them. The hypocrisy of politeness is useful. It's not just hypocritical, it's useful because if we would be completely honest with each other without any politeness, then like children, you know, who go in the restaurant and say, oh, at home we never get something so big on our plate like here, or, you know, or look, Daddy, what a strange nose that man has. Things like this, you know, and it's like, you know, the parents are. So, if as adults we would do this, I don't think we would be approaching the Third World War. I think we would be in the hundreds, you know, already. It would be just one big world war. So, etiquette helps, and also amongst Vaishnavas, that we are respectful and follow some rules in dealing with them. But basically, joy is what we are, what we naturally should feel upon seeing a Vaishnava. Like Nanda Maharaj, when Gargamuni came. Gargamuni came after Krishna was born, and Nanda Maharaj was so pleased. He said, oh, a Brahmana has come to my home. It is so rare to find a true Brahmana. That was like at the time of Krishna's birth. Can you imagine now, you know, where do you find them? So, and he just was so happy to see Gargamuni. So like this, so rare to find a Vaishnava. Such a blessing. So in this way, I have now elaborated on the first offense against the chanting of the holy name, which is explaining that one should not blaspheme the Vaishnavas. Vaishnav ninda, one should not criticize the Vaishnavas, one should handle them with care. There is a second offense in the chanting of the holy name, which is that one should consider that the name of the demigod, Lord Brahma, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are not equal to the name of Lord Vishnu. We should know that although Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are to be very much respected, they are not, and they have the greatest power, and in comparison to them, we are less than ants. Sometimes I have given an example about the demigods and how the demigods, they are so powerful that they can do all kinds of inconceivable things for us. Just like an ant, you know, is so small, and a human being can, from the perspective of an ant, do miracles. Like, what is the most desirable thing for an ant?
Sugar.
Sugar it is, indeed. So, you know, it is easy for us to make it rain sugar from the sky. Right? A child can do it. In fact, they like to do it. Right? So, you can make it rain sugar from the sky, and all the ants will dance and go, it's a miracle, it's amazing, you know, it's just raining sugar from the sky. And, you know, it wouldn't be surprising then if after a while, if you repeat this regularly, that the ants will make a statue of us, you know, and start worshipping the sugar god, right? Also known as sugar daddy. Anyway, so, you know, from their perspective, we are practically like, it's divine what we're doing. It's a total miracle. We make it rain sugar from the sky. How is it possible? I mean, you know, this is like inconceivable. For us, very simple, you know. I mean, easy to do. So, in the same way, the demigods are able to control natural powers and resources in a way that we cannot even understand or conceive of. And thus, it is not surprising that they are sometimes taken as God. Right? But that is a misconception. They are not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Narada Muni approached Lord Brahma, what we find in the Bhagavatam, then Narada Muni was saying, Oh Bhagavan, you are welcome to your own house. And Narada, that was not what Narada was saying to Lord Brahma. That was just a little intermezzo. But Narada was saying to Lord Brahma, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are the Supreme Lord in the entire universe. And then Lord Brahma said, no, I'm not. Oh no, I'm not. I am simply the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the Yamadutas found that they were arresting Ajamil and they were interfered by the Vishnu Dutas, they became very confused. How is it possible that anyone can go against the rule of Yamaraj? You know, Yamaraj, you know. No one escapes Yamaraj. And then they go against Yamaraj. How is this? And, you know, they complain to Yamaraj. And Yamaraj said, well, I got overruled, you know, by higher authority. Higher authority? But there is no higher authority than you. Yes, there is. There is a Supreme Lord, and I'm just his humble servant. So, in this way, we understand that the demigods are not equal to the Supreme Lord. And the point is, no matter how great, no matter how powerful the demigods are, their position is not eternal. Kota chatra nama mara mara jivati, says the poet Vijapati. He says, how many four-headed Brahmas have appeared and disappeared? Yeah? One after the other. Prabhupada explains that the life of the demigods, you know, which is so long, one day of their time is equal to 6 months of our time, and they live 10,000 years of their celestial years, so they live a very long time, still it is described, this is like a bubble in the ocean. Their life is gone. And the point is that when Hiranyakasipu approached Lord Brahma for immortality, Lord Brahma said, how can I give you what I don't have? Yeah? Ask something else. Because I'm not immortal. So, He's Haribo. Comment ça va?
Yeah.
Yes, this is how we can understand that the demigods can reward so many benedictions, but only temporary benedictions and not the eternal benediction. Not liberation. That only Lord Vishnu can grant. And more than that, Krishna, we were speaking this morning about Advaita Acharya, who is Mahavishnu, he is Vishnu, but he could not grant love of God. That only Krishna himself can grant. So, in this way, we are particularly worshipping Krishna. And we turn to Krishna for everything. Krishna is our shelter. Anya vilasita asunyam. Just worship Krishna. No need to, you know, to worry so much about the vastu. Oh my God, the vastu. Oh no, the vastu is not right. Inauspiciousness will come upon us. Oh my God. Oh, the muhurta, the muhurta. Everything must be done in the proper muhurta. Oh my God, the muhurta is not correct. Then everything will go wrong. No, no, wrong muhurta. The nakshatra, the nakshatra. Did you look at the nakshatra for the day? Yes. Ekadasi, Ekadasi. Is it alright to have initiation on the Ekadasi? Can you do it on the Ekadasi? Or is it better to do it on the Dwadasi? And like, you know, I mean, are these things allowed? And on what basis is this going on? Oh my God. All these things are happening. Oh no. I'm getting like an ulcer from all the anxiety thinking about it. What to do? But do not worry. Do not worry. Because everything is compensated for, simply. Yes. When the door is on the wrong side of the house, not good. Oh, 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 oh. Not good at all. No, no, no. When the door is the wrong size, oh, oh, oh. Too big, oh, oh. Too small, very big problem. And there's a tree in the wrong place. Oh, 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 oh. A road coming straight into your house. Ooh, it's like a spear coming into the house. Ay, 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 ay. Oh, so many things. But I'm chanting Hanuman Chalisa on every day. Every day. 100 times. So that must work. Now, we are not trying to get power. We are not Shaktas. The Shaktas are trying to control by power. Through the Shakti. Somehow or other, let me chant this mantra, and the mantra contains the Shakti. Oh yes, and then the Shakti will adjust everything. No. Monkey way and the cat way. The monkey way is the way of Shakti. The little monkey is holding on with little hands to the big mother. By its own strength, by its own Shakti. The kitten is lifted by the superior strength of the mother. We are being protected by Krishna. He makes all the adjustments, whatever is wrong. We rely on Krishna. So Krishna takes us out of the spiritual world, out of the material world. If anything is wrong, Krishna will adjust it. And in Kali Yuga, everything is wrong. Every house is wrong. It's like everything is wrong. Everything. From we get up in the wrong way in the morning. My God, the bathroom is in the house. The bathroom is in the house. The whole house is contaminated. If there is a toilet in the house, then basically the whole house becomes a bathroom. From that day on, the house is officially a bathroom. It cannot be anything else because there's a toilet in there. It's a bathroom. Sorry to say that. The whole house is now contaminated in a bathroom. But nowadays, every Indian wants a attached bath. Yes. From hotel, you have attached baths? No attached baths. Yes. No, that room we will not take. Everything is wrong. Everything is no longer following the Vedic scripture. Hey! Come.
come. Giriraj.
So everything is wrong. We're never going to be able to adjust it all. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains, to follow the Vedic culture is very difficult. He says it's very intricate. You have to sit in a certain way, facing certain directions for certain activities. There's endless. Everything is prescribed. Right? It says one must follow his prescribed duty. Everything is prescribed duty. So complicated. And who knows what is right and what is wrong? I have spoken about the black cat. You know the black cat story? Very simple, but it was a marriage and this, that, and made all these arrangements. And last minute, when the jest was about to go, there was this black cat. So what to do now? So inauspicious black cat, oh my God. Put a basket over it, quickly. And thank God that cat was quiet. And everything went fine. 30 years later, the daughter who was getting married now was arranging the marriage for her daughter. She made all the arrangements, everything ready for the marriage. Is it complete? Yes, complete. No, one thing, we need a black cat. A black cat under a basket. And since then, every marriage has a black cat under a basket. And that's the thing. And every ritual has some black cats. That's the thing. So who knows even what the proper ritual is? So no. But there are still Brahmanas who really know the Vedas. Excuse me. Maybe, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that only 6% of all the Vedas are still available. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta pointed out that the Brahmanas, in order to be a proper Brahmana, according to Vedic culture, one must follow many sanskaras. Right? And however, he pointed out that all the scriptures that describe how to properly execute these sanskaras are no longer available. He said, therefore, it is no longer possible to be a Brahmana through the Vedic sanskaras, because the scriptures are lost. We can't even do that. But we are coming in the line of the Narada Pancharatra, the Pancharatriki, and in Pancharatra, one can perform the Pancharatik sanskar. So today we are performing this Pancharatik sanskar. And that sanskar it doesn't matter what the conditions are, it doesn't matter where the people are from, anyone can be purified. We'll chant that mantra, Om Apavitra Pavitrova Sarva Vasta Kato Piva Yasmarit Pundarikaksam Sabaya Vyantara Suchi. Once we start the yajna, which means Om Apavitra Pavitrova. Whether one is apavitra or pavitra, whether one is pure or impure, it doesn't matter. Sarva avasta, whatever condition of life one comes from, gato piva, one can anyway attain the supreme goal. This paramgati, sabaya abhyantara suchi. One can, through this process, which works both external and internal, one will become suchi, pure, clean, cleansed externally and internally in our behavior and in our consciousness. So, maybe not today, just by some mystic ritual where we throw some grain in the fire and we are transformed, but by the vow that we take and that will carry with us from this yajna, and that vow will be our companion. And having that companion, we will go forward. Okay, I don't know if I'll carry on with all the 10 offenses, because I'm going very slow today. I'm just decided. Well, there's no rush because we are here in a private home and we have all the time of the world. There's no other activities that need to be done. We can take time for things. So let me say shortly, third offense, disobey the order of the spiritual master. Spiritual master is not an ordinary person. Whatever he says, we should take it very serious. We should really try and take it to heart. You know, we say so many things and just people don't listen. I find so many times I say so many things and it just... people laugh, you know, and just go on, and it just bounces off. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada was in Chicago, and there was the O'Hare Airport, and he told Mukunda, just go to the director of the airport and tell him to call it O'Hare Krishna Airport. And they laughed, you know, they thought, that's a good joke. Yeah, that's a good one, that's a good one. But for Prabhupada, it was not a joke. He was, because Prabhupada was one who left no stone unturned. No stone unturned means no opportunity did he ever ignore. Right? Every opportunity he tried to explore, you see, to somehow or other see if people could take Krishna consciousness. He wasn't naive. He wasn't thinking, oh yes, the director will surely call his airport O'Hare Krishna Airport. But, well, you know, my mother used to say, you know, just ask. Oh, no, I can't ask. No, just ask. You can't lose anything. No, you already have, and you can get yes. So you can only win. You cannot lose. You know, if you don't ask, you have just no. Right? But if you ask, you know, if they say no, you already had that, so you haven't lost anything, but you can gain. You can gain yes. So push me forward, go and ask. Oh God. But Prabhupada, just fearless, right? Nothing held him back. He would just ask anybody. Just yada de kitarika. Now, that is what we inherited, the order we inherited from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yaradeke Tarakaha Krishna Upadesh. Whomever you meet, tell them about Krishna and the instructions of Krishna. And when Prabhupada came, that sloka came to life, right? That verse came to life. It never had anyone like literally like done it in that way. Right? Okay, sometimes you preach a bit, you know, but to everyone, but Prabhupada, everyone, right? Always. Yeah. That's where we come to life. So this is what we've inherited, that somehow or other we should we should share Krishna consciousness with others. Mm-hmm. Achar and prachar. We should have proper behavior ourselves as Vaishnavas, and we should do something to preach. And that's when obeying the order of the spiritual master. That is our first order. That's our first order. Okay, fourth offense, blaspheming the Vedic literature, literature pursuant to the Vedic version. That means there are all kinds of Vedic literatures, and all of them are respected. Some are transcendental, some are even Traigunya Visaya Veda, Nistraigunya Bhava Arjuna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying some Vedic literatures are not transcendental. They are in the three modes of material nature. But still, they're connected. All the Vedic literature is interconnected, and therefore even the ones that are not transcendental are still leading us to the transcendental. So we respect them all, and then we move on to the to the pure Vaishnava Shastra. But we respect the Vedic literature. Then we move on to Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and so on. Like sometimes they say that we are bringing back Vedic culture, and we speak about Vedic culture. Then I sometimes ask the devotees, is there anyone here in the room who's read the four Vedas? Who read the Vedas? But we read the essence of the Vedas in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. That we are reading. But we're respectful to all, but especially Srimad Bhagavatam is our book, not Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is a summary and preliminary. If you'd say, what is your main book? It's not Bhagavad Gita. Our main book is Srimad Bhagavatam. And why is it so? Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is not directly described. But in the Bhagavatam, Krishna is described very elaborately. Therefore, that's our main book. From the Bhagavatam, we find out who Krishna really is. Therefore, we have to read the Bhagavatam. And before we get to Krishna, we have to go through some preliminary understandings of how Krishna expands himself into various forms and how to attain him. And Bhagavatam provides all that. So, whether it is after the first initiation or the second initiation, from that day on, Bhagavatam should become our main reading, our main book. And it's like, you know, Jayapataka Maharaj, he has many, many disciples, and he has organized the initiations quite well, and he has many questionnaires. Right? And, you know, there's the Brahminical test, and then there's also personal, many questions about personal life. What books have you read? Yeah? The whole list is there. And then sometimes you're shocked, you know, to see, like, how far we are. After many, many years, people are still... Have you read the Bhagavatam? Well, partially. Well, where are you? In which canto? In the first canto. You know? In the first canto, yeah, some spiritual masters... His Holiness Krishna Kshetra Swami, he demands that before the first initiation, the candidates must read the entire Bhagavatam. That's his personal standard. Now, I'm not that tough, right? but I think you're getting the idea, though, where it's heading. Finish the whole Bhagavatam?
Tenth canto.
Okay, hurry up. So we should read Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada said he had one complaint, and that complaint was, my disciples are not reading my books. Well, his grand disciples are also not reading the books, and even the great grand disciple sort of could do better. So we would like to emphasize that. Fifth offense, consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be imagination. The holy name is Krishna, so everything can come from this holy name. It's as simple as that. More I won't say about it. This sixth offense gives some interpretation on the holy name. Yeah, to try and draw out all kinds of difficult, complicated symbolic meanings out of the holy name. It's just simple. Krishna, the Prabhupada said, Krishna is Yasoda Nanda, Nanda Nanda. And he's like that coward boy from Vrindavan. And and those who are fortunate are allowed to serve him, and that's all. There's no need for more than that. Sevens offends, commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name. Especially Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is speaking on this topic elaborately, that what happens is that Krishna, although one is chanting, when one purposely just commits sinful activities anyway, what happens then is that Krishna withdraws himself from the name. And you may chant, but all that is there is a empty shell. It's an empty shell. You chant the name, but Krishna has withdrawn. And you can chant for many, many births, but still not get the benefit from such chant. So that's interesting, how it becomes an empty shell. So we should try to avoid sinful activity. Then there may be accidental. I remember in Vrindavan, 1 year, how our Sridhar Swami from our ISKCON, who now left his body, was speaking, and there it was the festival, and there were, maybe a few thousand devotees for the lecture, and Sridhar Maharaj is sitting, and you know, he just sits like, and he's like, you know, I have thought about this for a long, long time, and you know, I feel I cannot keep it in my heart any longer. I feel I have to speak. I have to speak about it and just reveal it to all of you. And you think, oh no, what's he going to say now? You know, it didn't sound good at all, right? It sounded like, whoa. So everyone is sitting sort of like this, you know, on the edge of their cushion or whatever we were sitting on the edge of the carpet. And next moment, he says, it happened last year in France. And we go, oh no! And he's telling this in public in front of 1,000 devotees. Oh no! He says, yes, it happened last year in France. I broke the regulative principle. He's thinking, no, not another sannyasi who bit the dust, and then in such a way he's telling us, this is just terrible. And then he says, yes, it was in France. I ate Danone yogurt. And he's explaining. He said, normally Danone yogurt is vegetarian. He said, but last year in France there was a period that somehow or other the factory couldn't get the how do you call this, rennet, you know, the vegetarian rennet. So then they used the other one. You know? And then it was not vegetarian. It's just like, you know, as far as he knew it was vegetarian. So he ate it. Yeah? He ate it. So that's an accident. That's an accident. We'll let you off on an accident. Yeah. Krishna lets you out on an accident. He doesn't withdraw from the holy name when there's an accident. I mean, sometimes there are even accidents, you know. Boy sees girl sees boy, boy talks to girl talks to boy, and you know, boy likes girl likes boy. The conversation goes on longer than they expected, and they sit a bit close, and you know, and the next day they meet again, and then, you know, and suddenly from one thing came another, and gee, you know, like, I mean, how did that happen? Yeah. It all got out of hand. How did that happen? Yeah, how did that happen?
Yeah. Gosh, you know, I wonder, how did that happen?
But anyway, still, that counts as an accident if it happens once, but the second time, it's no longer an accident. And so we must be very careful to remain pure. And then as of late, many devotees have confided in me that they sometimes drink coffee. And it's like, well, I have to drive, you know.
No, really, I have to drive, you know? Oh, yeah. Okay, you know, I mean, it's like, it's a matter of life and death, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, it's to save my life, you know? I mean, then it's an emergency. I can drink some coffee then, right? Wonderful, that's all right, you know? So, and they tell me that, others say, yeah, you know, it's just like, it helps me digest. Others, they say, yeah, I have to work on the computer for a long time and I get tired and then, like, you know, and, you know, it's my job and, you know, yeah, and then I just need something to sort of keep on going. So, but this is outrageous. What has become of this movement that now gradually this is slipping in and this is sort of looked upon as, yeah, it's okay, you know, don't make a big deal about it. I'm making a big deal about it, right? It's total nonsense. And do not forget, it is like, yeah, I'm from the Netherlands and it's a country of boats, you know, so, but if in a boat there is a hole, right, and water comes in through the hole, and what happens is it gets bigger. Due to the force of the water, it gets bigger. Right? So it's like you make a hole, you let in some Maya, more Maya will come in. Yeah. That's it. You know, if you let in a little Maya, you say, well, it's just a little. Yeah. Letting a little Maya in is opening the door for more. I guarantee you that. Yeah. Therefore, I once give initiation in Mayapur to a devotee, and then afterwards we met Janadivas Prabhu in Mayapur. So I asked Janadivas, I said, he just took initiation. I said, could you please give him some your blessings? Yeah. So Janadivas said, you just took initiation. Oh, that is very nice. He said, because the time when you just take initiation is a very special time. It is the time where everything is fresh and you are full of very good positive energy. He said, this is the time where you can really put some good habits in place. He set some really good standards and you can build some really good habits from that. He said, of course, you know, I didn't do that and I only know it theoretically. Yeah, you know, out of humility. But this is... this is very nice. So, this is a time to be strict. Strict is not fanatic. Strict means we're serious. Strict means I want to go back home. I want to go back to the spiritual world this time. And that's why we're doing it. We're doing this. It's so funny that somebody's gone so far that they walk in some strange costume, that they smear war paint on their face, that they, you know, walk around like this, so world strange, and then they're gonna, like, you know, bend the rules. That's, gosh, you know, you came so far, and then try and sort of bend the rules a bit so you get some more space. It's funny, I think. It's awkward. Eight offense is to consider chant of Hare Krishna as one of your auspicious ritualistic ceremonies offered in the Vedic literatures as karma kanda. That's a mouthful, and we have said it 100 times and heard it many times. But what does it mean? There are different meanings we can draw from that, but the main meaning that I draw from it is that a karma kanda ritual is a material activity, is a Vedic ritual, which fixes our material situation.
So when you do a Karma Kanda ritual, then you expect auspiciousness. Now all my problems are gone. Now everything will be fine, because the Brahmana came to our house from Bhrigu. Oh yeah, Bhargava. He did all this yajna, etc. And now I know everything will be fine. Karma Kanda. Fine. But we are not talking now Karma Kanda. No. Now we are talking about a transcendental process. And it has a different purpose. It doesn't have the purpose to fix our material life. It has the purpose to please Krishna and attract the mercy of Krishna. And that mercy of Krishna may or may not fix our material life. Therefore, don't say, yeah, but I'm a devotee. How can this happen to me? This calamity. How could it happen? Oh, you know, and just give up chanting. No. This process is not meant to fix our material life. It is meant to take us back to Krishna, and back to devotional service to Him. And materially what happens, you know, South Africa is a dangerous country because a lot of violence, and I'm there regularly, and we had some devotees who were murdered, and I remember one particular program. I said, how could this happen to a devotee? And then all the sannyasis present, Bhakti Charu Maharaj was there, Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj was there, and Indrajumna Maharaj was there, and all the sannyasis were speaking about, yeah, the devotees were asking, well, but isn't Krishna protecting his devotee? How can this happen? He said, no, Krishna is protecting his devotee. Always protecting his devotee and never not protecting his devotee. But Krishna may or may not protect the body, but he will always protect the soul. So even if the body is not protected, still the soul is protected. In this way, this Krishna consciousness is different from Karma Kanda. It is not going to fix our material problems. So we should not fall into that illusion. Ninth offense, preach to the faithless. Well, we preach. We're not going to tell everything about Vrindavan and Krishna and the gopis to materialistic persons. We tell them about follow four regulative principles, chant 16 rounds, and the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. And that we can tell to everyone widely. Tenth offense, maintain material attachment even after receiving some instructions on this matter. I call this the I compare it to keeping a pet. You know, you have a pet and you're just feeding your pet, regularly feeding it. Sometimes you see these dogs, they're so fat, you know, like all round with four legs under it. They can hardly walk, they wobble, right? Overly fat. And that kind of a spoiled pet. So it says one should not maintain material desires. But material desires we have. And in the fourth canto, in Dhruva Maharaj, it says, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udara di. Whether you have material desires or don't have material desires, you should dedicate yourself with great force to pure devotional service. So it's not forbidden to have material desires, but one shouldn't feed them. That's recommended. Now, in different ashrams, there may be different levels of that. For a householder, it may be okay to go to the supermarket and buy ice cream and read the label, and the label says okay, and ting ting, offer it to Krishna and prasadam. for a sannyasi to go to the supermarket and buy a tub of ice cream, even with bona fide ingredients, is not really a dharma, unless he's very hungry and there's nothing else to eat. It's another story, but you know. But it wouldn't be a common practice. But when a sannyasi comes to a householder's house and the householder said, "Please, please accept this," you know, accept your offering, then he can take. Then it's also the love he's taking. So each ashram. Anyway, don't offer it to me. each ashram has its own codes. But still, let's go back to Godhead. Let's somehow or other. It's tough. I also find this. It's not so easy, but let us do that. Few minutes on second initiation, because I'm later on going to meet separately with the candidates for second initiation. Anyone who has second initiation can also be there at that time, at that lecture. In second initiation there are two things. One is Brahminical standards, cleanliness first of all, and dedication to the scripture, being responsible in following the scripture. And the other thing is that in the Vaishnava tradition, it is not only about Brahminical standards, but it is also, we begin to meditate on Krishna, on the world of Krishna. We chant more than one Gayatri mantra. We chant the Brahma Gayatri, which is commonly chanted by Brahmas, but we also chant many Vaishnav Gayatris. And in these Vaishnav Gayatris, we begin to meditate on Krishna's world. We are serving Krishna in his world, not like serving Krishna in my world. Oh Krishna, oh Krishna, please don't let us get a flat tire today. Oh Krishna, please let me pass this exam. Oh Krishna, oh Krishna. Oh Krishna, oh Krishna, oh Krishna, please accept me. Oh Krishna, help me now to chant my rounds. Oh Krishna, please. And my alarm clock is broken. Oh Krishna, please wake me up. Oh Krishna. No. Now, at the second initiation, I'm going to serve Krishna in his world. What is pleasing to him? Not like Krishna, what's pleasing to us, but what is pleasing to Krishna. That is the essence. Whether we have like the Brahmin thread this way, that way, you know, or whether we chant exactly at noon. Are you chanting exactly at noon? Well, we missed it, Sujapal. Ay, 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 ay. It's 12 plus 1. But, the actual rising of the sun at noon is not noon. It's actually, according to the constellation, different time. And we're on summertime anyway. Yay. So we're just about okay. We're getting close to noon. So we can still sort of hit the right time for those who have second initiation. Relief. And we're soon going to have a 5-minute break for whatever everyone wants to do. And then we'll continue with the actual, with the yakya and so on. I am now... So later on, we'll speak more about the second initiation. I'll now ask the candidates for the first initiation to come forward. And if both come this way.